I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Also, I want to mention something. This is a housekeeping item. We're not able to mute everyone today. So if everyone could please mute your phones so we don't have background sound coming in, that would be much appreciated, and we'll probably do a reminder of that as people continue to join in. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 20 years in business and just entering our seventh year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2014 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication and events tab. So you can go back and scroll through and look for different ideas and topics through there. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, which Tom is featured in, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage and get a copy for yourself. Lighthouse has really grown at a very rapid pace over the last 36 months, which you can read about on our website. Our topic today is global strategic planning. What are the 10 top considerations? My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, then we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, to bring effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style assessments, to raise the hiring bar, and to assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training for the 21st century, exploring global options for expanding your business, sales and customer service training, and operational productivity improvement. Each of our programs helps to avoid getting stuck in shallow waters so our clients have smooth sailing. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations, trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we get from clients both domestically and globally to address various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. So you may want to write down two or three questions to either send in during the program or ask when we open up the line. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider with your team and trusted advisors. I'd like to introduce our special guest, who is Tom Drucker. Tom is a wonderful friend, and as you'll see shortly, he is extremely experienced in this topic. Tom works with leaders to achieve business success by leveraging the strengths of their people and overcoming the very human yet often unseen obstacles that get in their way. Tom has degrees in both psychology and business from UCLA and blends these skills to deliver usable insights that have lasting impacts on their business and, most importantly, on the hearts and minds of people that Tom works with. Tom has well over 30 years of experience working with Fortune 500 companies, mid-cap startups, in both service and manufacturing. I truly feel privileged to have Tom with us today, back on Open Line to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program, and the topic will be leadership for today's environment. Tom, welcome back to Open Line.
Well, thank you, Dana, for that kind introduction. Just to say a little bit more about today's topic, it's really designed for companies and people of any size company, because today global strategic planning could encompass companies that operate onshore within the United States but purchase products from offshore. as well as companies who are considering opening up markets offshore. So we are living truly in, as Thomas Friedman said, a flat world. We are living in a global economy. And so most any businesses today that operate may have considerations or opportunities to either buy or sell their products in ways that they hadn't thought about even a few years ago, either buying what they manufacture or parts that they deal with or outsource certain services offshore or sell offshore. So it's really a broad range of topics that we may cover today. And the top 10 considerations are probably applicable to most companies, so we thought we'd just dive right in. The first one is planning in general, whether you're planning to look beyond the boundaries of the 50 states or any type of planning should be a process and not an event. It should be a dynamic document that isn't just prepared once a year and lives in a file that nobody refers to. I began to study planning when I was in the graduate business school at UCLA, but my real planning learning came when I was picked by the chairman of Xerox Corporation to help him move his organization from the analog to the digital platform. Built up an organization of several hundred people, mostly behavioral scientists, who developed strategies and leadership training programs for Xerox globally. And the most important thing that I learned was that planning needed to be dynamic. It needed to be updated at least quarterly because circumstances changed. And so what we found was a planning template that helped looking at the company from both inside and outside dynamics, looking at your competitors. Most people are familiar with a SWOT analysis or some other type of analysis that looked at the company's strengths, the opportunities, the weaknesses and opportunities from the inside of the company as well as the outside marketplace, looking at your competitors, looking at the competitive dynamics that were going on in the specific marketplace of products or services or both, and then looked at the company's talent pipeline, looking not just at what you had today, but what you look at going forward. And very often when you're moving from a product that is sold in a simple way to a service model, which often involves technology and systems, the skill mix of people need to change. Dane and I were just at a prospective client where you wouldn't think, given their business, which was a pretty old line business, they would be in that same boat. But because of the technology involved, their whole business and talent mix was changing. And so, again, it's pretty rare today to find a company that isn't having to do planning in a different way based on the way their marketplace is changing. The second item is global planning requires an unbiased examination of your current sales and distribution strategy. You can read the rest there for yourself. It really is important that as you look to do anything beyond what you're doing now, that you want to examine with pretty clear eyes what the company that you've got now, the snapshot of it, is looked at not only through your own eyes, but just like the classic line of, I think it was Buddha, the three great mysteries of life are air to the bird, fish to the water, and human beings to ourselves, that can be extended to our own company. So smart leaders will pull people in from the field. I'm working with a company now that has 600 retail units across Canada and the United States. And when they do planning, they pull in people from different regions. They pull in newly hired people, high potential people, but newly hired from competitors or from different industries. And they pick their brains. They look at old plans and they ask them to pick holes in them. So they know that new ideas come from the edges, not from the old hands. And they mix them up into groups so that they encourage the new people to poke holes in the plans based on what they've seen in other industries and from their recent jobs. It helps to refresh the ideas and to keep the messages current. So just again, an idea that global planning, just like any planning process, needs to be kept fresh. It needs to begin to challenge the sacred cows, if you will, and the way, quote, things have always been done around here. Planning needs to be a process of refreshing, renewal, and challenging the old ways. Issue 3 and 4. Don't assume your current business model can just be replicated or exported. There's a well-known story about Harley-Davidson. They felt that they had such a powerful global brand that they would be successful wherever they went. And if any of you are bike riders, you know that the Japanese brands really did take Harley-Davidson to task when they tried to export their brand overseas, particularly to Asia. It did not work. It took a while to adapt that brand to the Asian market. It had a number of false starts because Honda, particularly, was so well entrenched. And Harley had to pull back its initial entry, particularly into Japan, and rethink the way that they introduced their brand. It wasn't just the cycle, it was the brand image. And it was initially rejected, and it became a very expensive lesson for them, and they had to start over. That lesson can be read online. It's a Harvard business case, a fairly famous one. The point is that hubris and whatever you call the arrogance of the American mindset doesn't work anymore. It's important that there be not only a humble attitude towards, if you want to call it, the American mindset, but also to use research, fact-based assumptions, and a very sensitive understanding of the culture of the different markets that you may want to go into. And on the reverse side, when you're in a supply chain situation, you may find that the purchasing process needs to be well understood, and the pricing models need to be well thought through before you switch to offshore purchasing. I'm working right now with someone who was working in a field where they were basically doing manufacturing of goods that were not regulated, and then they went into cosmetics. And as you would imagine, cosmetics are a highly regulated field. And the factories they were working with said, oh, don't worry, we've done lots of cosmetics. Well, they did, but the cosmetics that they were churning out were of a lower quality, and the manufacturer that they were working with and the suppliers that they were working with did not meet the standards of their customers. and it took several rounds to find a manufacturer that met the standards of the customers. And in the meantime, a lot of money was lost because, again, they didn't check the quality assurance process. A similar situation was encountered with a small tax that was paid to the licensing arm of Philips, who owns a certain patent when DVDs are processed offshore in China. And again, the companies that I work for do not skimp on anything. They play by the rules. And so this one factory decided not to pay us a certain tax, and that was discovered. And besides a lot of embarrassment, it cost the factory and the importer a fair amount in penalties. So again, you want to be very careful to check all the small items that add up if the rules of engagement are not fully understood. The next item to be careful about, when I click my, there we go. Never underestimate the value and power of your particular brand. I did a lot of work for Playboy when it was going through a phase of global expansion. It turned out to be that their domestic revenues, as many of you may know, were shrinking badly as the magazine lost its luster. But in the 90s, it had the third most recognizable brand around the world. And as it was launching its entertainment division, the majority of its revenues came from licensing. And so as Hugh Hefner was turning the business over to his daughter, the transition that I helped with, we boosted its licensing division. Swenson's Ice Cream, which disappeared from San Francisco and pretty much the United States, is flourishing in the Asian markets because a large conglomerate bought that brand. And many of you who travel overseas, I'm sure, have seen how brands have just flourished that have virtually disappeared from the United States. So again, if you are wondering what to do with a brand that is not doing well here, it's quite amazing how brands have a resurgence overseas. As a side note, a good friend of mine for the last 30 years, as they say, is a performer. And his name is David Pomerantz, and he is a huge star in the Philippines and is virtually unknown in America. Interesting, but true. So, never underestimate the value and power of your brand somewhere in the world. Issue 5, a global plan may be cost-effective, but rapidly effective. Well, let me just read this correctly. The point here is that you may grow more through acquisition and grow more quickly. Studying your competition here and abroad can often prove to be a valuable way to jumpstart broadening your global sales. Vincard L-Safe is an example. They were a dominant brand in Europe. They made safes for hotels. A company called Assa Abloy in Stockholm bought that brand and now is a dominant player around the world. They represent a large percentage of safes in American hotels, but it's not a brand that's known in America. But the company itself is doing very well. Because they are part of a global network. It's known as Assa Abloy Hospitality, and they also own the patents on the ability to use your cell phone as a hotel key, which we'll be rolling out soon to cell phones around the world. But again, they grew by buying this very solid company that just made safes, and now they're part of a global brand, which is not particularly well-known in America, but if you're in the hospitality industry, you will know them very well. But you don't need to be known as a brand in order to do well in a niche business. So acquisition, particularly with interest rates the way they are today, can be a very effective way, either at the public company or as a private company, to boost your revenues and leverage your P&L. So it should be something that as a group of companies you can often do better than growing it organically. Where are we in time? We're doing pretty well. Any questions that have come in, Dana, that we may want to address?
When looking to expand, do cultural differences matter? And how does a company assess to see if the organization is equipped to deal with the cultural differences?
Great question. Let me say that cultural differences do matter, and they matter in a variety of ways. You can have cultural differences within the United States of people who hold American passports. So let me be clear about that. You can certainly have cultural differences with people who are born elsewhere and live and work in the United States. And you can certainly have cultural differences if you are contemplating working with suppliers from overseas, and or acquiring companies overseas, or working with companies or individuals overseas. And I would say there are three things about cultural differences that are important to understand. Number one, language. I work with several companies who claim language is the English is the language they do business in. That's what they claim. And then I get to work with the executives, and English is clearly not the language they work in. So when I sit and work with, and this is true in some senior-level executives and more true in middle-level executives, that their English skills are not up to having meaningful, detailed conversations. And so what happens is their reporting gets put into numbers, which is a universal language. Their reports get either vetted or translated and truncated. And so discussions become difficult to get underneath the numbers, and that becomes somewhat of a problem. Translators, interpreters are frowned upon in the companies that I work with because, again, English is presumed to be the language of the company. So it's important, again, if you're working with suppliers, that more likely is a situation where interpreters are more accepted. Again, you want to bring your own rather than rely on your host to provide an interpreter. Second, customs matter. And I don't mean the official customs, I mean the cultural customs. You want to avoid inadvertently upsetting people by being unaware of certain customs, whether it's not bringing a gift, if gifts are part of the ritual, or being late, if being on time is considered part of the grace and politeness. You want to be very just sensitive by reading a book, and there are many out there. In fact, Dana's book is quite good about some of the cultural norms that you'd want to pay attention to. So I'd recommend getting his book. And then there's just common sense. You want to look people in the eye. You want to smile. You want to be gracious. You want to ask them what they feel comfortable with. You want to be yourself. The most important thing I learned, and I started, as I say, at Xerox and spent 15 years there and went all over the world for them, and I was quite young when I did this, and I'm sure I made many mistakes. But the thing that I think got me the most positive response was that I was genuine, and I was very willing to learn, and I demonstrated that I wasn't an aggressive, egotistical American from corporate office. I was a human being first, and I was there to be a human being with them, title aside, mission aside, just being there with them and being gracious goes a long way. The Japanese taught me that you build a relationship first and you do business last. And that was a lesson that I have to this day remembered and practiced in every culture I have been in. And that has, I think, been a powerful message. So culture does matter, and your humanity matters as much as culture. What was the next question, Dana?
Oh, that's perfect, Tom. Let's hit it from a time standpoint. We can address the other question later on.
Okay. Issue 6. Yes, actually, since this slide was written, they have opened in Singapore. I haven't seen it, but I heard it's doing really well. I don't know, anyone on the line been in Singapore and seen the In-N-Out Burger? You can unmute and say so if you have. Sorry?
Or you can put it on the chat box also.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I know I was in, it'll come to me. I was in Dubai, and I saw a Pinkberry. And I also saw a Tom's outlet. And I was in Delhi, and I saw a Tom's. And, you know, our culture is spreading. Some people see that as good. Some people see that as not so good. But we are in a global world, and that is the way it's going. And there you go. I was also in Dubai, and I know Guggenheim is opening a museum there, as are many of the universities and medical schools. So we are living in a world where we will see brands and hospitals and universities and museums that we're not used to seeing in the Gulf States, but they're doing that for obvious reasons. So we are living in this very odd world. And while money will buy you a lot, it won't buy you the sustainable, what I would call customer loyalty. that has to be locally created. So the thing that I would encourage when you do, if you are planning to operate globally, is your brand will buy you something, but your local people have to operate locally. So you can think globally, but you have to operate locally. And I have found this to be true with my experience in Xerox and my experience in my current clients that operate globally. There is a different feel to the experiences. I just recently did some work for McDonald's in their technology department. So they're inventing new food and new offerings. And they have people coming from all over the world into their test kitchens in Illinois, in Oak Brook. And it's very interesting because they can configure kitchens to represent any possible imagined food you'd want to cook in any part of the world. And they send in local people, you know, to do the work. And you can see the differences in the way they cook and in the way they interact. And then I've now gone to some places, like I was just in India, and it is very, very different than when you walk into a McDonald's, you know, in the U.S. Not just the food, but the way they serve the food. Or in France, they weren't doing very well, and I think there's a slide in here later on where it says McDonald's was failing in France until they started offering wine. And now France is one of their biggest markets.
What you do is, I understand, you will. Okay.
Tom, two questions just came in. Also, we have a large audience today. For several, please mute your phones so we're not picking up background noise. It would be appreciated. So the first question is, when going to a different market globally, is it important to retain a local advertising and marketing firm in that particular region? And the second part of that question is the brand promise. How would that get intertwined to maintain consistency?
Well, it would depend. Certainly, you would want a firm that had knowledge of the local environment. Now, there are certain, you know, large advertising agencies that have a presence or have an associate in that area. So the answer to the first question is yes. You want to make sure that the local advertising people understand the local markets, otherwise they can't buy ads at a decent price and they can't tailor the ads to the local culture. So, yeah, you don't have to necessarily go to a local agency, but you have to have an agency that has a local affiliate, absolutely. The second part of that question is the brand promise may be the same. Disney's promise is the same. Apple's promise is the same. So it depends on your promise. McDonald's promise is the same. In fact, I'm just trying to think of a global brand whose promise is different.
It's a webinar.
I can't offhand think of one.
I have to listen to this because I have to do one.
Because your brand promise, if it's a global brand, I don't think would change for a region or a culture. But your advertising would be localized to fit that local market. But I can't, Xerox's brand promise was the same. GE's brand promise is the same. And I'd be interested on the line if anyone can think of a brand promise that would be different.
That's a good point. It's got to be consistent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. But the advertising definitely would be and should be tailored to not only the country but the region. I saw, I was recently in India on on a vacation, and I could see the same Colgate as a client I've had for a while, and I could see how different regions would adapt their tooth, you know, their dental hygiene ads differently in the city and in the rural areas, and in different rural areas they would be adapted differently. But the promise is the same. The brand promise is the same.
Huh. Thank you, Tom.
And, by the way, just to be clear, the advertising was more directed towards the villagers and the children doing the things necessary to keep their teeth healthy, and to the mothers who, you know, had the responsibility for early child care in the villages, and it was more educationally focused than it was in the cities, which was more young adults looking more attractive. You know, obvious kind of changes in the ad focus. Issue 7, go slow. Don't rush your global planning or your expansion or entering a new supply chain contract. Test. You want to not, particularly if you're a small firm or a mid-cap firm, you do not want to blow a large amount of capital just because you're excited about something. The example there was something I watched happen from a distance, and it was just, you know, a bunch of engineers got excited and spent a whole ton of money where they didn't have to, and then the technology just passed them by, and they looked like they had made huge mistakes, which they had. And so they felt the pressure to put a lot of gear in the field, and they did, and it was a bad bet, and they had poor oversight, and that's part of the reason that they lost their shirts. So you want to be careful and thoughtful. And sorry about that background noise. And so again, I urge small and mid-cap companies to be thoughtful, and market testing is a good way to be thoughtful and use facts and fact-based analyses to go slow. If you're expanding your supply chain, use tests, get samples, and make sure that you're covering all your regulatory bases. Sorry about the small print. I actually sort of covered this. Gather market and consumer data. Really be thoughtful. Particularly, don't rely on someone who uses their gut or their observational analysis to be convincing. Because someone who went there, as I just did, and told you some stories of what I saw, should not be the basis of making an investment decision. You want to use professionally gathered data, and you want to match that with what, you know, other people see on the field and what your you know, advertising firm or market analysis firm will tell you. But I have seen, particularly in the last few years, you know, a senior executive will come back all excited, and he'll say, boy, I saw this, and I saw that, and we ought to do this, and then people get excited, and they do that, and it fails, you know, because they just were a focus group of one. They just happened to be, you know, a large shareholder or a senior executive. And, you know, everyone gets excited, or everyone knows someone who has this great factory that they found, or their buddy has a factory that was doing something. That's how this firm got into cosmetics. But the cosmetic factory wasn't up to the standards that this company needed and didn't know it. Or another, you know, guy came back from a factory that was printing CDs and didn't know they weren't paying the royalty to Philips. So you really got to check things out and don't get overly excited by one data point. And then number nine, remember your customer satisfaction is paramount to success anywhere. We have to be customer-facing as people in business today, and consumer habits ultimately determine the effectiveness of what you're going to be doing. And Walmart is a good example of that. They started years ago, decades ago now, to demand more sustainable packaging practices and focus on reducing their carbon footprint, which has gone right down to their supply chain in a way that really is a gold standard today and has influenced thousands of other companies and suppliers to do the same thing. Sustainability is becoming a huge impacting phenomena in every part of global business, as it should be, by the way. And it's particularly important in global business. So companies as diverse as Coca-Cola, which is has been one of the most unsustainable businesses because of their use of water. There have been many instances where they will build a plant, suck the water out of the water table, and farmers in the area will not be able to farm because they don't have any water in their wells. And so Coke is doing some things to reverse that. Some would say not enough, fast enough, but nevertheless they are being more responsible than they used to be. So there's a lot of unintended consequences of global expansion on a big scale.
Huh.
On a
That's
small
interesting.
Scale.
I wouldn't have thought about that.
Yeah, it's been terrible. It's now being slowly reversed, and they are doing some good things to reverse it. But I'm sure most of you know about fair-traded coffee, where, you know, people are now buying coffee from suppliers that actually are teaching coffee suppliers how to grow fine coffee in a way that is sustainable and giving them more money and more education to allow them to actually earn a living and we get better coffee. Starbucks has been doing that for a long time. Pizza's been doing that for a long time. And others. Tom's is another example of a company that's made a real commitment. Every time you buy a pair of glasses, they send a pair of glasses off to a village somewhere in Africa or Asia where kids need glasses and don't have the money to buy them. So there are things that companies here can do that will raise their profile by being more active in a global economy in a way that raises their corporate value in economic terms as well as in social terms, social responsibility terms. So there's lots and lots of things that can be done in a global context that we're just beginning to get our arms around as business consultants and coaches and entrepreneurs, which again is a very important part of business in the next coming decades. And I would encourage all of you on this web conference to look at your own companies and look at your suppliers and look at your customers and see what you can do to join that growing network of people who are looking at what's called the triple bottom line of paying attention to profit always, but also paying attention to corporate social responsibility in terms of how the planet is being supported and how people and their well-being are being supported around the world. It's an important way to look at your business locally and globally. In issue 10, basically smart people don't know everything, and you want to pull talent from everywhere you can. The thing that I would really suggest is looking not just outside your company, but inside your company. It's amazing when you do talent management and you take it seriously. It means looking beneath the resume at the people you already have in your organization. You may find that people have come from different countries, have different knowledge bases and skills. And again, depending on the size of your company or the complexity of the work that you do, you may have people in one part of the organization that, by virtue of their training elsewhere, may have some knowledge and skill that you can tap. As you consider your supply chain, your value chain, as it's sometimes called, your distribution systems, you may find people in your organization looking to contribute to your own growth in ways that you hadn't considered. Good ideas often come from the edges, not from the boardroom. And again, you may find that your growth opportunities come from looking at your suppliers, looking at your vendors, looking more broadly at the network of people that you and your company operate inside of, and taking the time to make those thoughtful hypotheses and then testing them out so that you grow in a way that can be both organic and incremental, as well as looking for ideation sessions that give you and others a chance, if they say, outside of the box and outside of your norm, and come up with ideas that use the capacity of our connected global workplace to think of ideas that you might not have thought of a year or 6 months ago that could leapfrog your business in ways that are remarkable, because we live in a time of enormous opportunity as well as risk, but it is really a time where the creative thinker and the thoughtful actor can make a huge difference in the lives of the companies that you work in or the companies you may want to start tomorrow. So that would be my I guess my ending paragraph. We're about 10 minutes away from stopping, so this may be a good time to open it up to questions, Dana.
That's perfect, Tom. Let me just, we've had feedback in the past, people like the recording feature turned off when we opened up for Q&A. So why don't we go to the last slide, and in just a few minutes you'll have the opportunity to talk with Tom, and I'll have the recording feature turned off in just a second. You'll see in your screen the area you can register for our upcoming July 22nd Open Line program, which is entitled Leadership for Today's Environment. So please sign up today, reserve a space for yourself, and let others know within your organization or colleagues if they'd like to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. You can share it also on your website or with fellow members. Tom and I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that Tom shared. If you'd like to contact Tom directly to have further discussions on specifics about your industry, your team, or have some one-to-one time to discuss some of the ideas that were shared today, you'll see Tom's contact information on the screen. If you have additional questions about services from Lighthouse, please email me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com, and we'd love to hear from you regarding other topics you'd like to have us address. I want to thank you all for attending. Let me turn the recording off, and we'll open the lineup for Tom. just one second.